Yay, the Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District of Texas is now in session.
Thank you, may be seated. I would like to welcome everybody here to the Second Court of Appeals this afternoon, where we have one case set for oral argument. I understand that counsel have checked in and everybody's ready to go. Before we start, I'll introduce the panel that we have. To my left is Justice Mike Wallach. To my right, Justice Dana Womack, and I'm Elizabeth Kerr. So all that said, I'll ask the clerk to call the case.
Court will now call Zillow Inc. Zillow Groups Incorporated versus BMB Development LLC, Michael Benson and Verdina Benson. May it please the court, Mr. Rusty O'Kane will argue for the appellant, and Mr. Joe Greenhill will argue for the appellee.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, my name is Rusty O'Kane, and along with my colleague Colin Benton, we represent the Zillow appellants. As the court knows, this case involves the appeal of a denial of Zillow's TCPA motion to dismiss, which is a three-step process in the analysis. Step one of the analysis is critically important here, that the statements alleged to be made by Zillow fall within a matter of public concern. Specifically, the TCPA applies to any legal action that is based on or in response to a party's right of free speech. The right of free speech is defined to be a matter of public concern where there is, under the plain language of the statute, a matter of social or other interest to the community, or a subject of concern to the public.
Do we need to even get there if the appellees are correct in saying that they had briefed the commercial speech exemption in the trial court and that's not talked about in your briefing?
No, they're not correct, because this court's decision in the Grant versus Finnessy case, 2023 Westlaw 894-0395, specifically talks about addressing exemptions within the TCPA in step one of the analysis. And specifically, that court stated that when a non-movement invokes the exemption, the trial court must consider its applicability in the context of determining whether the TCPA movement has met its initial burden under the first step of the dismissal process. Here, there are a number of exemptions in the TCPA. The TCPA does not apply, for example, to insurance code cases. It does not apply to the Texas Security Act cases. There are a number of exemptions that fall within the statute, and the courts are clear, and this court is clear, that where a non-movement invokes the exemption, you look at it within the first step of the process. Does the TCPA apply? Zillow's issue.
Didn't we say in, what was that case? Can't remember which one it was, but I know that we've had an opinion handed down within the last couple of years where we basically said if an exemption applies, you don't even have to go through the step one analysis.
There is a case that talks about whether or not at your discretion you can look at the exemption first before going there, but most of the cases, and including the Grant case, specifically talk about doing it within the framework of step one. So even if the court in its discretion decided to look at the exemption first, here Zillow's issue specifically stated that the TCPA applies. And if the TCPA applies, then the commercial speech exemption necessarily does not. And the reason that we addressed it that way is because, for example, several cases talk about obviously the Texas Supreme Court just came out the other week, March 14th of this year. Whenever possible, we reject form over substance requirements and talking about waiver. We address the merits of an appeal. Texas Rule of Appellate Procedure 38.1F also talks about addressing that a statement of an issue be treated as covering every subsidiary that's fairly included. So here, that's what we have, is the question of whether an exemption applies, you address within step one, does the TCPA apply? And so here, if the TCPA applies, which Zillow argued in its opening brief, then necessarily the commercial speech does not apply. And also there's no evidence to support the elements of commercial speech as a matter of law. For example, there's no evidence that Zillow actually made the statement. That's the second element as addressed in the Castleman case. Additionally, Zillow is not primarily engaged in the business of selling goods or services. Zillow is a entity that facilitates homeowners to sell their properties.
I'm just playing devil's advocate here, those points that you just made, how the appellees didn't establish the exemption and all the other things, would that have been better addressed in your opening brief?
I don't think so, no. Could it have been? Potentially, but until the appellees raised it in their response brief, for example, we address it in the reply brief before submission with the court, giving the court an opportunity to have all the information necessary and all the information available to it to determine whether or not the commercial speech exemption applied. But because the primary issue and the primary argument raised by the appellees below was that this was not a matter of public concern. The focus of the appellees from the beginning has been that homes being sold on Zillow are not a matter of public concern. That's where the focus of their arguments have been. That's what the focus of the hearing in the trial court was. And that's primarily the argument that was raised here. The issue is that they try to play what I call a game of gotcha, saying, let's focus on this procedural issue that says, oh, you waived it because you didn't specifically use the magic words, the commercial speech exemption does not apply. But issue one that Zillow raised was the TCPA does apply. And based on the Grant case and many, many others that say you address the exemption in the context of and intertwined with step one of the analysis.
Do you see any legal significance in the fact that, in the trial court, in response to your TCPA motion, the appellees raised commercial speech? You talked about it in the reply to the response to your TCPA motion. And then at the hearing, y'all talked about the commercial speech exemption and why it didn't apply. Is there anything legally significant to the fact that the plaintiffs, appellees, did not talk about that exemption in the hearing?
I'm going to say yes and no. How do you like that answer? The answer is no, the answer is yes, because the burden is on the appellees or the plaintiffs to prove the commercial speech exemption. If they don't put forward evidence sufficient to show the commercial speech exemption applies, then they, by definition, have not met their burden. We preempted.
But that's separate from what they argued at the hearing.
Correct. That's absolutely true. And so that's where my no answer would come from, is that I think that the issue is here. Does the court have enough information before it to address the issue under step one, does the TCPA apply? Here, the TCPA does apply. And because the TCPA applies, you look at all of the exemptions in the framework of that step one analysis. I do not believe you look at it first. I do not think the case law bears and supports looking at the exemption as a threshold matter, because you don't get to the exemption unless and until you've decided that the TCPA itself applies, specifically that this is a legal action based on or in response to a party's right of free speech. You would never look to the exemption unless you first concluded that the legal action is based on or in response to the exercise of free speech. So in that context, here, it is clear to Zillow that the TCPA does apply, which is why we addressed it as an issue one, sole issue, that the TCPA applies, or that the trial court erred by denying the TCPA. And specifically, I want to address the fact that not every house on Zillow rises to a matter of public concern. If I sold my house on Zillow, my house does not have a helipad or an airport in its backyard. My house has also not appeared in the Wall Street Journal or the Robb Report or WFAA or the Dallas Morning News. The Benson's house appeared in all of those media publications. And if the court looks at the Project Rose case out of the Tyler Court of Appeals in 2021, they specifically did the analysis within that framework and stated, this business venture did in fact lead to significant interest in the community as it was covered by several media outlets because the parties, by design, utilize the media and press coverage to foster public interest in the project. The appellees here admit, it's on page one of their brief, it's scattered throughout the clerk's record, that they intentionally devised a media strategy and a media blitz to roll out this house and make it a public interest, a matter of public interest or common interest. The entire premise of the appellee's claim is that Zillow's alleged statements were so public and combined with the media campaign and combined with the media coverage that the public saw the statements allegedly made by Zillow and opted not to purchase this house because of the impact of Zillow's public statements. They can't have it both ways. If the statements were so public that they influenced the public's buying behavior, then by necessity, the statements must have been a matter of public concern, because you cannot say that the statements affected the public's buying pattern and influenced the public's behavior with respect to this house unless you're willing to concede that the statements mattered to the public. Because if the statements didn't matter to the public wouldn't have made buying decisions based on them. So there's not...
What public are we talking about?
The home buying public.
The home buying... What percentage of the home buying public? What percentage of the home buying public could possibly even be interested in this house?
Great example, but I think that the Decatur community would certainly be interested because it affects home prices, it affects valuation, and again, here... This was appeared in national publications, including but not limited to the Dallas Morning News, the Wall Street Journal, WFAA, the Robb Report. This was widely publicized, so I don't necessarily know the percentage, but it certainly mattered enough where this is initially listed as a $14.5 million home. The potential public looking at that is admittedly probably narrow. But that's why they cast such a wide net to the public at large all across the country. I'm reminded just candidly of it's not in the record, but Michael Jordan's house recently sold, and it was on the market for 10 plus years up in Chicago, but it was covered by ESPN, and it was covered by all these publications because the unique nature of the house. Here we have the same thing. The Bensons intentionally created a house that was so unique. It has, according to the articles that are in our briefing and in the clerk's record, are matters of public interest. And the definition, and we look at, this court is tasked with looking at the plain language of the statute. And it says, of interest to the community. And I'd encourage the court to look at the Whitelock versus Stewart case, which was in the El Paso Court of Appeals in 2023. And that case involved, and I know this because I was the attorney who handled that case, the court found that the TCPA applied because even involving a horse breeding community. Surely there is, I would argue, a lower percentage of the public looking at horse breeding community, specifically Andalusian horses, than people who look at Zillow, which has 160 million listings on its website. So what the court found there was the allegations that the plaintiff had committed fraud in her role as the club's vice president was clearly of interest to this particular community. So if you look at the plain language of the statute, it says of interest to the community. This house was of interest to the Decatur community, the wider DFW community, possibly the Texas community. I mean, it doesn't have a geographic or percentage limitation. It is of social or other interest to the community. Here, I think that applies. And the appellees intended for it to apply because they rolled out their media campaign, and that Project Rose case specifically talks about where media coverage is involved by design, that creates the interest. Likewise, the Kipp case out of the Houston Court of Appeals, 651 Southwest 3rd 530, talks about a communication regarding a good product or service in the marketplace that has, quote, some relevance to a wider audience of consumers in the marketplace constitutes a matter of public concern. So when you read those three cases in context and together, you have here, it's on all fours. You have a media strategy designed by the appellees to bring the public to their property. You have a website that talks about allegedly talks about this property, and you have a home being sold in the marketplace to the wider community. All of those things coincide to create a matter of social or other interest to the community or a matter of concern to the public. With respect to the commercial speech exemption, again, I would point to this court's long case, 2021 Westlaw 733085, which again talks about reading the briefing in a wider context, and it says, we are to liberally and reasonably construe the briefs. And I think, Justice Kerr, this goes to your point. We are to liberally and reasonably construe the briefs, considering the parties' arguments, the evidence, and citations in order to resolve appeals on the merits and not procedural defects. If there was a question over whether or not the opening brief should have used the magic words, commercial speech does not apply, this court was free to and could have asked for additional briefing, additional information to address that issue. But because it was adequately addressed in the reply brief, and it was reasonably subsumed and intertwined with the Zillow's issue on appeal and the four attendant sub-issues, I think the court can reasonably conclude that, one, the TCPA applies, therefore the exemption does not, and the appellees did not present evidence to meet each element of their claims.
Now, well, okay, so this Bear Hilty case that the appellees point us to from 2022, there, the court talked about how the trial court could have had three separate reasons for denying the TCPA motion, and one of them appeared to be the step one, but then the second one was a commercial speech exemption, or there was a prima facie case made for each element of the claim, so that there were three possible roads for the Court of Appeals to have denied the motion, and because the appellant there didn't challenge specifically, didn't brief the commercial speech exemption, then since that was an unbriefed issue that the trial court could have decided the case on. I understand Bertucci says, you know, but that seemed to involve a different set of circumstances altogether.
And I recognize I'm out of time, but I do want to address that point. The Bear case, in that case, Bear did not dispute on appeal that Hunt provided by a preponderance of the evidence that its malpractice claims fall within the commercial speech exemption. There was a concession made, which is not here. The appellants here do not concede that the commercial speech exemption applies, and so they were not challenging the commercial speech exemption in that case. Your Honor pointed out, the Bertucci case specifically addresses that, and the Pacific Employers Insurance case, 958 Southwest 2nd at 454, also talks about that same concept, which is cited in Bayer, which talks about we are to bound to consider points on appeal even though not technically proper in the brief. And so here, the court is directed by both the Texas Rules of Appellate Procedure, the Texas Supreme Court, and this court's own precedent to address, to liberally construe the briefs to include subsidiary issues.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I just noticed that your red light was on.
Thank you. And we can address that more in rebuttal. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. The TCPA was designed to protect constitutional rights against retaliatory lawsuits. Lawsuits, the Supreme Court said in Lipsky, that were designed only to chill First Amendment rights. And if you look at the petition in this case, it just doesn't apply. The Benson suit is based on Zillow's statements that the private property the Bensons were selling was in foreclosure because they had defaulted on a loan. That's it. Okay, this case does not involve the Constitution, and it certainly doesn't involve any political or social issues that are important to the public. But in an effort to get an early dismissal of a lawsuit, Zillow has tried to shoehorn this case into the TCPA by relying solely on the Benson's efforts to market the property. But as the Supreme Court said in the Houston Astros McLean case, which is cited in our brief, quote, communications do not become a matter of public concern simply based on the nature of the party's business. The Benson's business is marketing and selling property. If if Zillow were right that advertising a product for sale is enough to invoke the TCPA, any product listed on the internet anywhere, any statement about that product would then be subject to a TCPA motion to dismiss. But again, the TCPA is designed only to protect constitutional rights from retaliatory lawsuits. So what Zillow is really trying to say, and they rely on the Project Rose case for this, is that the Bensons, by advertising their property, have made themselves limited-purpose public figures under the TCPA. But for reasons I'm going to get to in a moment, that doesn't work. Ultimately, Zillow is trying to get this court to give it a no-evidence summary judgment without doing the work. And that's not a proper use of the TCPA, and we think the court should affirm. So with the time I have today, I'm just going to touch on really two things and maybe three things I have time. First, why this case does not involve a matter of public concern. And second, why we think the evidence meets the prima facie standard for showing that Zillow actually published the statements at issue. Obviously, we think, and we briefed, we think Zillow has waived the challenge to the commercial speech exemption. Unfortunately, we think they needed to challenge all independent grounds. But it's a straightforward issue, and I won't belabor it unless the court has any.
Well, I do have a question. Is it your position that that the plaintiffs below presented sufficient evidence to show that a commercial speech exemption would have applied or would apply?
It is our burden to show that the commercial speech exemption applies. I do think, yes, we presented enough evidence. I don't think it makes a difference, Your Honor, that we didn't mention at the hearing. Of course, it's a non-evidentiary hearing. In our response to the motion to dismiss, we attached several exhibits that talk about, you know, a lot of them come from Zillow's exhibits too, talk about Zillow's services in the marketplace and how it markets itself as a sort of a one-stop shop for real property, and they can finance and do things like that. So we think if you look at the briefing on that and the exhibits that we attached to our motion, to our response, and the evidence they attached to their motion, we met the prima facie standard to meet the commercial speech exemption. So I want to focus on the application of the TCPA for the matter of public concern, and then briefly the evidence that Zillow actually made the statements at issue. So as the court knows, step one, Zillow has the burden to show the TCPA applies, right? And as Justice Wallach recently said in the Newstream Hotels case, which is 2022 Westlaw 1496537, the court, quote, favors the conclusion that statements are not a matter of public concern. Now, the TCPA, as the court knows, was amended in 2019 along with the definition of matter of public concern. And as Justice Kerr recently noted in the Montoya-Frazier case, the amendments were designed, quote, to narrow the TCPA's scope. So as amended, the TCPA says that a statement is a matter of public concern when it is regarding, quote, a matter of political, social, or other interest to the community or a subject of concern to the public. Now, this language was borrowed from mainstream First Amendment jurisprudence, and specifically the Snyder versus Phelps case out of the U.S. Supreme Court. And the courts that have interpreted this, the other courts of appeals that have interpreted this language, say this was intended for the courts to focus on the public component, because the previous definition of matter of public concern had several different categories of things that could be a matter of public concern, even if they didn't protect constitutional rights. So we're really focused on things that are politically important, socially important. And what we've got here are statements about a private property for sale being in foreclosure because a private individual defaulted on a loan is not a matter of political or social importance to the community. Now, I think Zillow has effectively acknowledged this, and instead they've tried to say, well, it matters to the real estate residential marketplace and community, this Decatur community. But as we pointed out in our briefing, several courts have rejected movements' attempts to invoke the TCPA by saying that the statements it issued mattered to some amorphous ad hoc community. We cited you the Fanatics case, 2025 Westlaw 414747 out of the Dallas Court of Appeals, where that court said, quote, people who share an interest in sports and sports collectibles were not a community within the meaning of the TCPA because it was too amorphous and too ad hoc to constitute a community. The Sampson case out of the Houston Court of Appeals, which is also cited in our brief, talked about communications that were important to a volleyball community. And the court said, the statements relate only to the interests of the parties and other parents with an interest in the volleyball club, not the public at large. And finally, the Fuller case, which we've also cited in our brief, the court rejected the argument that communications related to a private country club community were a matter of public concern. And I would like to point out that in the Fuller case, the Dallas Court of Appeals construed the term community in the amended definition of the TCPA and said, use dictionary definitions to say community is a body of individuals organized into a unit or manifesting, usually with awareness, some unifying trait or a group of people having a religion, race, profession, or other particular characteristic in common. So the Dallas Court of Appeals said this community has got to be something that's well-defined. People are aware they're in it. And the people who are supposedly interested in the Benson's property do not fit within that definition of a community. Now, they've relied on the Whitelock case out of the El Paso Court of Appeals. But in that case, the communications that the suit was based on were about criminal allegations and fraud, which, of course, are per se matters of public concern. And not only that, the community statement that opposing counsel quoted to you, which was dicta, by the way, talked about the horse community. And that was an international organization of horse breeders. So it fits under Fuller's definition of people who are organized into a unit. People who are supposedly interested in buying the Benson's property simply don't fit the bill. And not only that, but Zillow has produced no evidence of who this community consists of and whether they're interested in the property. The evidence they pointed to in the reply is about the rollout campaign. But as I'm about to get into, the rollout campaign does not ipso facto make any communications about the Benson's property a matter of public concern. So as I mentioned in my introduction, advertising a product in the media cannot automatically make something a matter of public concern because that would expand the TCPA well beyond its intended scope and suck in all sorts of cases that have nothing to do with the Constitution or retaliatory lawsuits. Again, the Supreme Court in the McLean case said communications about an economically important entity, the Houston Astros in that case, which was undoubtedly a public interest, communications about the Houston Astros did not automatically make those communications a matter of public concern.
Only the operators of radar guns.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Only the operators of radar guns.
That's right. Yes, Your Honor. So again, in the Benson's are in the business of marketing and selling property. And so their efforts to do what their business is supposed to do don't automatically make anything that anything says about their products a matter of public concerns. They issue this marketing campaign to make money, not to inform the public about an important political or societal issue. It was directed at their potential clients, not the public at large. And if you look at Mrs. Benson's affidavit, she talks about this. This is at Clerk's Record 186, how BMB, their business, is designed to purchase and renovate properties and then market those properties because they've gained experience and how to market these particular types of properties. So, and as I also mentioned, Zillow, really what they're trying to do is make the Bensons a limited purpose public figure under 27001-7A of the definition of matter of public concern. And as I mentioned, they rely on the Project Rose case, which is a public figure case. And under the 27001-7A public figure, a communication is a matter of public concern when it is, quote, about a public official, public figure, or other person who has drawn substantial public attention due to the person's official acts, fame, notoriety, or celebrity. So number one, that prong, 0017A, was not the basis for Zillow's motion. And we cited you cases in our brief that say you have to confine your review to the basis that were raised in the motion. In any event, it doesn't work. The Bensons aren't public figures, and their marketing campaign was not designed to draw substantial public attention to themselves, and it certainly was not an official act. And if you look in our brief, we've defined official act. Official act means something that's of relating sort of the public. You know, it's an official act of a legislator or a public figure. And if you look at the Fanatics case, which is also cited in our brief, talks about, it's going through this prong and talks about substantial public interest. It can't be just, you know, a small Decatur community who's interested in the property, even if that existed, which we don't think it does. And finally, I'll just comment briefly on Zillow's theory that our statements, or Zillow's argument that we have to have it be a matter of public concern to prove our defamation case. Of course, this confuses whether or not a statement is a matter of public concern with what we're required to ultimately prove to prove our damages for a defamation case. If every statement that was in the media, if every negative statement that was in the media was a matter of public concern, there would be no defamation cases. The Dallas Court of Appeals in the Fuller case that's cited in our brief stated it succinctly, negative comments do not automatically implicate a matter of public concern. So while Zillow's statements cast a negative light over the Bensons, there's nothing to suggest that Zillow's statements would affect anyone in the public at large beyond the people who are interested in the home. At most, it goes to damages that we'll ultimately have to prove at trial. So we don't think the TCPA applies, and the court should affirm for that reason. And just briefly, I'm going to point the court just to some evidence about they've made a, their big argument, Zillow's big argument is that we don't have any evidence that they published the statements at issue, the defamatory statements at issue. But that's not true. Again, Justice Kerr, you said in the Strickland case, which is also the case that talks about the commercial speech exemption being something you can skip step one. In the Strickland case, it's not a high hurdle, and the prima facie evidence is, quote, taken at face value. And you're quoting the Winstead case, the Texas Supreme Court's Winstead case. Again, Justice Kerr, you said the TCPA stage is not a battle of the evidence, so a claim survives if the evidence is legally sufficient to establish a claim as factually true if it is not countered. So what we've got, the evidence that shows that Zillow has published these statements, prima facie evidence. For starters, they've acknowledged, Zillow's acknowledged, that the identical statements that appeared in Mrs. Benson's search on DuckDuckGo appear on Zillow's website in a drop-down portion of when you click on.
Just as a general description of what pre-foreclosure means.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And for purposes of this case, those statements exist nowhere else but Zillow. They have not said that they appear on Redfin, for example, or Realtor.com. As far as we know, they only appear on Zillow, which I think supports a rational inference that the statements that appeared in the search engine came from Zillow. But beyond that, we've got evidence from Microsoft employee and a DuckDuckGo employee who talks about how when they pull things from websites to list in their text descriptions, they don't manipulate that information. It comes from the website from which they pulled it. And then finally, if you look at our expert's affidavit, Zillow calls these affidavits self-serving because they used to be defendants, but that's a credibility determination that's not appropriate at this stage. And then finally, we have Chris Smith's affidavit, who's our expert. His affidavit is 345 of the clerk's record. And if you read it, there's a lot of technical jargon in there that, frankly, is a little bit complicated for me to understand. But effectively, what he's saying is when search engines, websites like Zillow are motivated to manipulate their search engine optimization or something along those lines so that they're listed first. When someone types something into a search engine, they pop up first. And so they're very good at manipulating their what's called meta descriptions of things that they're going to then, that search engines are then going to pull and put on the website. So Zillow does that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But Mr. Smith has testified that information, the meta description, is then appears in the text description exactly like it appears on the website. So their whole position that there's no evidence that it actually appeared on the website connected to the property does not undercut the notion that it did come from Zillow and they gave it to DuckDuckGo to produce.
Let me just ask you briefly. I mean, I know that the discussion today and a lot of the briefing has been about the language about foreclosure or pre-foreclosure. But what's the plaintiff's position on, as I understand it, there are two other things that they're complaining about that Zillow allegedly did, saying that for a while that the property was in Alvord and not Decatur, and that it was an apartment or townhouse available for rent. I mean, are those things that you're also saying caused you damage?
Yes, Your Honor. It caused confusion with our marketing campaign and the rollout in that critical 60 to 90 day window when we're advertising a property for sale as a home in Decatur. It causes confusion and potentially torpedoes our ability to sell the property. And the court the court in the Miller case that said this, you don't have to find each and every statement at this stage of the game, each and every statement that's attributed to the defendant to be defamatory. The plaintiff at this point has to prove the factual basis for the defamation claim. So if we prove one or two statements are defamatory, then that's all you have to do at this stage. So Your Honors, we think the TCPA simply doesn't apply. We think that they've not adequately challenged a commercial speech exemption, but beyond that, we think this case is a purely private case for purely private profit for the Bensons, and the TCPA simply wasn't designed, especially as amended, to apply to this case. So unless the court has any further questions about that, I'll cede the rest of my time back to the court.
Thank you.
May it please the court. With respect to waiver, there was no surprise, and all of the cases that discuss issues of waiver, it addresses issues of surprise. Here, the appellees were not surprised, and all of the issues were raised within the subsidiary issue of step one. Second, with respect to the community, if the community were as narrow as the appellees would ask the court to define it, then they would have focused their media efforts on specific publications for high net worth individuals or real estate individuals. Instead, they wanted the public at large to know that the house had an airport in the backyard and a helipad, and that it was $14.5 million.
Would they want the public to know that, or is this a strategy to gin up a potential buyer who could then brag about the fact that, oh, hey, the property I just bought was, you know, in the Wall Street Journal and
all of the above? That's exactly the point, right? If I go out on the street corner and I take a bullhorn and I'm on the sidewalk and I'm screaming at the top of my lungs, I think everybody in here would agree that I have the right to free speech to do that. Doesn't necessarily make it a matter of public concern if I get sued because of what I said on the bullhorn, because nobody cares. But if I then call the Dallas Morning News and the Wall Street Journal and the Robb Report and WFAA, and they're across the street filming me, and then it appears on the 5 o'clock news, and then people are talking about it, suddenly that becomes a matter of public concern. That's exactly what the appellees did here. Not every website, and Zillow is not taking the position that every website creates a matter of public concern, but Zillow is taking the position that where the appellees develop a intentional media strategy to drive public interest, that falls within step one.
At what level do you cross from not being public interest by advertising your home or whatever? Do you cross over into becoming a public interest? Is it because you put a sign out front? Is it because you go on MLS? Or is it because your broker does a Facebook Live presentation? At what point do you cross the line?
I don't know that you have to. I don't know the answer. And I don't know that you have to get there in this opinion. It's not that nuanced here, because what we have here is an unequivocal decision or unequivocal evidence that shows the allegations are that Zillow made statements that affected the public's buying behavior. And that created a matter of interest to the community, because they are saying that the public's buying behavior and buying patterns were affected by these statements. And if you look, and I do want to address very briefly step two, because there's an important point here. The video that was submitted in the clerk's record, a native video taken by the appellees, shows that Zillow did not make the statements. Yes, the language came from a different part of the website, but the appellees allege that Zillow made a defamatory statement about the property and about the owners. When Ms. Benson took the video, and it's submitted as part of the clerk's record, shows the DuckDuckGo search results. That's not Zillow's website. They click into that link and go to the property listing. Remember, the appellees allege that Zillow made a statement about the property and about the owners. When you click in there, you do not see anything about foreclosure.
Well, what about the two, I guess, lesser things that the plaintiffs seem to be complaining about, the Alvord and the rental apartment or townhome?
None of those were publicly stated. In other words, what that was is that if you went into Zillow's website and you searched specifically for Decatur homes for sale, this home didn't come up. There was a boundary issue, a boundary on the map. And so that was corrected, and they've never really alleged that that was what, and if you look at the clerk's record in the communications that Ms. Benson had with the customer care team, that was never really, that was one more thing she was complaining about.
I think I saw a couple of all caps emails where she was pretty hot about that.
Yeah, has never really been alleged to have affected the buying public's decision. That was sort of one more thing in her complaint that this is one more thing you got wrong, but one, I don't think that's capable of defamatory meaning to say that your home is in Alvord versus Decatur. And so the real issue is they've made the allegation that saying someone was in foreclosure created a defamatory meaning. So,
but they also pleaded tortious interference, though, right?
They did. And if the court looks at the elements of that, you will see they have no contracts, no prospective buyers, no LOIs, and no specific contract at issue that was terminated or interfered with. And that's why they fail under step two. I see that I'm out of time, but unless the court has any additional questions, I will take my seat.
All right. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, we appreciate the oral argument. It's been very helpful. And with that, your case is submitted and we'll stand adjourned.